Little Foxes by Michael Morpurgo, Chapter 4. Billy looked on that day as they played all over the mound, stalking and pouncing on each other, rolling locked together down the slope and then springing apart again to play a remorseless game of tag and hide-and-seek. And then, as suddenly as it had begun, it stopped, and a prolonged grooming session began, followed by a snooze in the thin spring sunlight, a bundle of foxes breathing as one. A crackling of twigs in the undergrowth was enough to wake them and send them scuttling down into the earth, and Billy was about to leave, believing the show to be over, when he saw the vixen, a pigeon hanging from her mouth, padding through the graveyard, her white-tipped brush trailing behind her. He froze and prayed he had not been seen. The cubs came out one by one to greet their mother and looked on patiently as the vixen neatly pulled away first the long grey primary feathers and then the downy secondaries until the pigeon was plucked clean. She kept shaking her head to rid her teeth of the feathers. The meal of regurgitated pigeon was soon over and each cub lay back replete while their mother checked them over in turn. And every few seconds she would lift her black nose and look about her nervously. She vanished down into the earth soon after the meal, taking her cubs with her. Billy was cold to the bone and he needed to stretch his cramped legs. He had seen enough for one day. He crept away from the chapel as if every blade of grass might creak like a floorboard. And then he was outside the fence and hopscotching successfully all the way home, never once allowing his feet to cross the cracks in the pavement. That night he took out his grey feather, held it in both hands, closed his eyes and willed the foxes to be there the next day. He knew that if the mother had caught his scent, she might well take her cubs elsewhere. It was this dread that kept him awake most of that night. He approached the den the next morning with the greatest caution, a damp forefinger in the air checking the wind direction to be sure they had no advance warning of his approach. But in his anxiety to see if they were still there, he went too fast through the undergrowth, stumbled over a root and almost fell. Cursing himself silently, he tiptoed on. He need not have worried, for the cubs lay in a pyramid on the mound, just where they had been the day before, and Billy settled down to watch. Each day during that first week of the spring holidays, he came to the mound and sat behind the chapel wall to watch. And after a week, he could identify every fox cub, but his eye was always drawn to the largest of them, the boldest, the one that had looked at him that first day. This was the one that seemed to call the tune whenever the vixen was away hunting. The others went where he went. In any mock battles, this one always ended up on top, astride his opponent and joyfully triumphant. This was the one that often stayed awake and on guard whilst the others slept, and Billy felt that only this fox cub was aware he was watching them, and he tolerated it because he understood that Billy was a benign presence that held no threat for them. The vixen appeared to be hunting alone. If there was a dog fox helping her, Billy never saw him. The vixen was a splendid creature with a thick yellow-brown coat that bounced on her back as she moved. Billy admired her greatly, and not just for her looks. She worked tirelessly for her fox cubs. Every waking minute was devoted to their well-being. She was endlessly patient with them, supplying their every need and seemingly spreading her affection and attention evenly between them. She brought back rabbits, mice, voles, minute shrews which the cubs threw into the air and juggled with, and judging by the variety of bones Billy found all over the mound, she must have visited every dustbin on the estate at one time or another in her endless struggle to keep her cubs alive. On the Sunday, before school began again for the summer term, Billy took a picnic lunch with him and spent the entire day fox-watching in the ruins. He wanted to make the best of his last day of freedom. He had not seen the vixen for a day or two and did not want to miss her, so he got there early and planned to stay until after dark. Auntie May would fret and fume, but he would risk that this time. The fox cubs were much altered since he first saw them. It was as if their white muzzles had somehow been stretched and pulled out to accommodate their teeth. Their noses were no longer brown, but black. And conversely, their dark chocolate coats had turned to milk chocolate, and the sparse, wispy hair had been replaced by a thicker, woolly pile. They seemed unsettled when he arrived. Only the larger one sat on top of the mound, his tail curled cat-like around his feet. The others yapped and whined anxiously around him, but he paid them little attention. They did not sleep much all that day either, and their games were brief and ill-tempered, and much to Billy's disappointment, they spent much of it underground. When they did appear, Billy noticed that one of them was listless, weak, and unkempt. He felt something was wrong, but could not think what it was. And he waited until it was dark for the vixen to appear, but again she did not. The cubs had gone below and were silent, and Billy put his ear to the ground and listened. He could hear nothing. He left them to make his way home for supper. He found a crowd gathered under the amber glow of the light outside the flats. Billy had to shield his eyes against the glaring headlights of a car as he ran towards it. Everyone was there, Auntie May running out in her fluffy mauve slippers and her curlers, and all the children were there in their dressing gowns, but the crowd was strangely silent. As Billy pushed his way through, he already knew what he would find. The vixen lay in the gutter, tongue lolling out, her unseeing eyes glinting fluorescent orange under the light. She was matted and muddied and somehow smaller in death. "I tried to stop. I thought it was a dog," said the man who was kneeling over her. "Just staggered out in front of me, she did. Almost as if she wanted me to hit her. Looked to me as if she'd been hit once already. Either that or she was drunk. She was dragging her back legs. I just finished her off, that's all. Not my fault. Only a fox anyway. Don't belong to anyone, does it?" So many feelings were racing through Billy's mind. Grief at the vixen's death, anger at its cause, and anxiety for the fox cubs left hungry in the wilderness. Everyone, of course, had to have their look. Someone wanted to cut off the brush for a trophy, but it was agreed in the end that the fox should be dumped in the dustbin for collection in the morning, before it began to smell. Billy made sure which dustbin it was before Auntie May took his hand and hauled him away. "I've been waiting for you for nearly 2 hours, Billy," she said. "Could have been you run over out there. I've told you time and again to get back home before dark. Worried sick I was. You got school tomorrow and you haven't had a bath for days. Look at you, Billy. You're filthy again. What do you get up to? No point in asking, I know. You never say anything, do you, Billy? It's not fair, Billy. It's not fair at all." Billy stole out of the flat before first light, taking the trowel Auntie May used for her flower boxes, and ran down to the dustbin. The vixen lay curled up at the bottom of the dustbin. Were it not for her unnatural stillness, she could have been asleep. Billy cradled her in his arms, and keeping away from the streetlights, ran across the estate towards the wilderness. The vixen was heavy, heavier than he'd imagined, and he had to stop and put her down several times before he reached a fence. The wilderness was alive with birdsong. He removed the turf carefully. The earth was soft in the graveyard, and within half an hour he had dug deeply enough. He prepared a smooth earth bed and laid the vixen gently to rest. He hated to cover her up, but once he had begun the job, he wanted to finish it and was quick about it. He laid the turfs back over the earth and trod them down with his foot. He stood for a moment looking down at the grave. "I'll look after them for you," he said. "Don't you worry. I promise I will look after them." He found a small branch that had fallen from the lime tree and pulled off the twigs until he was left with a cross. He pushed it firmly into the ground, picked a few primroses from the ruins and covered the grave with them. Then he turned away and left her there. Inside the walls of the ruined chapel, nothing stirred. Billy knelt down at the mouth of the den and spoke in a whisper. "It's all right," he said. "It's Billy. Billy Bunch, I'm your mother now. Do you hear me? And I'm going to be looking after you. Be back at lunchtime with some food. You'll be all right. You'll see." And he ran down to the canal and washed the earth off the trowel. Had he looked up then, he would have seen the swan watching him, motionless in the black water, but he did not. He turned and made for home. The street lights were still on as he raced across the estate. He had the presence of mind, before he climbed into bed, to take a tin of dried milk and two tins of corned beef from the larder and push them down to the bottom of his duffel bag. The rest, he thought, he would save back from his school dinner, as he had done last winter for the birds. At school, they had an hour's break for dinner. He usually ate alone, if he could find an empty table, and he managed that today, so it was nothing to slip the beef burgers and treacle tart into his duffel bag, and nothing to hide away the two blue plastic bowls. He ran out of the playground and made for the wilderness. The mound was deserted when he arrived, and that suited him. He did not want to frighten them away before they had a chance to get to know him. He opened the corned beef and emptied it out into four separate piles, making a trail of corned beef crumbs right to the mouth of the den. He broke the beef burgers in half and put each half onto the piles of corned beef. The treacle tart had disintegrated in the bottom of his duffel bag, but he gathered the sticky bits to garnish each cub's meal. The two plastic bowls he filled with water from the canal and then slowly sprinkled on the milk powder and stirred it with his finger until it became thick and creamy. And then he retreated behind his wall to wait. He heard the school bell go for the end of playtime. If he did not go down, he knew he would be missed, and that would be in trouble. But he could not bring himself to leave. He had to be sure they would take the food. He certainly didn't want anything else to take it. The noise from the distant playground faded, and he was left in the sudden silence of the wilderness. As he expected, the largest of them came out first. Hesitant and uncertain, he sniffed at the corned beef, backed away from it, sat down and ignored it studiously, surveying all around for some minutes before he decided it was safe to try and taste. A short yap of command brought the other three tumbling into the open, and they attacked one pile together, all four of them, before moving on to the next. It was not as Billy had planned it, but he was delighted nonetheless. They found the milk and lapped both bowls clean. And when he was sure they had had their fill, he rose up slowly from behind the wall so that they could see him. All four stayed for just a moment by the bowls, looking up at him, licking their lips, before three of them dashed into the den, leaving only the biggest of them behind. The boy and the fox cub looked at each other in silence for a full minute. Neither moved a muscle. Then the fox turned and walked away. Now at the mouth of the den, he stopped to consider Billy again, sat down to scratch himself, and then disappeared into the earth.